Chapter 4 Italians Around the World. Emigration from Italy belongs among the extraordinary movements of mankind. In its chief lineaments, it has no like. Through the number of men it has involved and the courses it has pursued, through its long continuance on a grand scale and its role in other lands, it stands alone. Robert Forster. An estimated 26 million people emigrated from Italy in the century from 1876 to 1976. Their primary destinations were Western Europe, North America, and South America, but significant numbers settled as far away as Australia. This was not a simple one-way migration. More than 8.5 million emigrants returned to Italy in just the period from 1905 to 1976. Those who immigrated to other countries in Europe were the most likely to return. About 90% were returnees in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, but even those who crossed the Atlantic returned to Italy in surprisingly large numbers. Around the beginning of the 20th century, approximately 40% of those who went to Brazil and to the United States returned, and even larger proportions returned from Argentina and Uruguay. Italy had a history of temporary migrations, first internal and then external, before the era of mass overseas migrations. Within Italy, men from one province often moved to another province in search of seasonal work as agricultural laborers, leaving their families behind, perhaps to farm their own small parcels of land. With the money earned while away, additional land could be bought or rented, until there was a large enough farm to support the family without continued migrations of the father. Behind such patterns was the basic economic insufficiency of their original locality and situation, often poverty-stricken, especially in southern Italy, combined with a local attachment too strong for permanent abandonment. Fishermen and others were also absent for long periods for similar reasons. Sometimes a sojourn of some years was necessary to earn the money to enable the family to survive, much less to improve their circumstance upon the return of fathers and older brothers who had been away working. In other cases, among stonemasons from the Piedmont region of northern Italy, for example, the seasonal migrations of males to other countries provided the main support of the community for centuries, while the women remained behind to do the farming. It was not wanderlust, but grim poverty, and a tenacious determination to deal with it, that led many Italians to migrate, and to endure miserable living conditions and great personal deprivation in many lands, while accumulating savings to send back home and take back home. As employment opportunities at close range dried up, or better opportunities opened up farther away, the migrations within Italy were increasingly overshadowed by longer-range migrations to Europe, to the Western Hemisphere, and eventually to Australia. Northern Italians predominated among the late 19th century emigration, and other European countries predominated among their destinations. Nearly two-thirds of the more than 5 million emigrants who left Italy in the last quarter of the 19th century were from the north, and two-thirds of the northerners emigrated to other countries in Europe, with the remaining third crossing the Atlantic. As emigration from Italy during the early 20th century reached even more vast proportions, southern Italians came to predominate, and their primary destinations shifted from Europe to the Western Hemisphere. While northern Italian emigrants continued overwhelmingly to prefer Europe as a destination during the 1901 to 1913 period, 91% of the southern Italian emigrants crossed the Atlantic. Emigration from central Italy was relatively modest in both periods. During the height of the emigration from Italy in the 20th century, northern and southern Italians were very similar in such demographic characteristics as age, marital status, and birth rate, and even in such general economic characteristics as proportions working in agriculture, industry, and commerce. But the per capita income in northern Italy was nearly 70% higher than in the south, and the illiteracy rate in the south was double that in the north. These large economic and educational disparities reflected regional differences in history, culture, and geography so profound as to cause Italy to be called a country in which two civilizations simultaneously exist in one national body. Northern Italy has long been the center of Italy's commerce and industry, home of the Renaissance, and the political spearhead of the forces that unified the long fragmented regions of the Italian peninsula into one nation in 1861. By contrast, southern Italy has long been poorer, more agricultural, and a cultural backwater dominated by folk traditions. Lawlessness was more prevalent in such southern regions as Calabria and Sicily than in northern Italy. Even geographically, the northern provinces have been more favored, benefiting agriculturally from more abundant rainfall and from the springtime water runoff from melting alpine snows, while southern Italy's highlands have not been high enough to provide such snow or the spring runoff it produces, and much of its lower-lying area has been malarial. While Italy has in recent centuries been one of the poorer countries of Europe, it was one of the richest, both economically and culturally, in the days of the Roman Empire, and again in medieval times, when it contained some of the most advanced regions of Europe. Before there was any such state as Italy, Venice was a major maritime republic, complete with its own powerful navy. Milan was a center for the production of armor. Italian merchants were to be found all over Europe. Banking was so highly developed in the region of Lombardy that its bankers spread to other countries, with Lombard Street in London's financial district being a result of their activities there in centuries past. The cultural and economic roles of Florence, Genoa, and other Italian cities were also historic. All of this, however, was in northern Italy. Regional differences have been biological and social, as well as cultural. Northern Italians have tended to be slightly taller and with a higher proportion of people with lighter complexion, hair, and eyes. Socially, northern Italians have distanced themselves from southern Italians both in Italy and overseas. It was northern Italians in the United States who urged the American government to collect separate statistics for the two groups. American statistics also include, as southern Italians, people who were called central Italians in the statistics of Italy and other countries. These finer regional and even more local breakdowns remained important in the history of Italians, both in Italy and overseas. Among the nations of Europe, Italy had one of the highest rates of illiteracy, 62% in 1871. But the regional variations concealed by this national figure were both large and growing for decades. While illiteracy was 42% in the Piedmont and 85% in Sicily in 1871, this declined rapidly in the Piedmont to only 11% illiteracy by 1911, while the decline in Sicily was to just 58%, increasing the disparity between the two regions from 2-to-1 in the earlier period to more than 5-to-1 in the later period. In parts of southern Italy, there was an active resistance to compulsory attendance laws, leading in some cases to riots in which schoolhouses were burned down. This resistance was based partly on a need for children's work to help supplement meager family incomes, and partly on a suspicion that schooling would produce few, if any, benefits for the lower classes in Italian society, while the orientation of the schools undermined family solidarity, which was crucial for survival. The different destinations of northern and southern Italian emigrants seemed to reflect their economic and cultural differences. Northern Italians fit more readily into the cultural pattern of Western Europe or of Latin America, and could more readily afford the passage to their destinations of choice. Southern Italians sought destinations where there was a strong demand for unskilled labor and where they could afford the travel expense. The Western Hemisphere met the first requirement, and the United States met both. In the early 20th century, the United States became the prime destination of emigrants from Italy, absorbing 41% of the total Italian emigration between 1906 and 1910, when emigration from the South surpassed that from the North of Italy. Italian immigration to the United States was overwhelmingly from southern Italy, and consisted overwhelmingly of unskilled workers. The extreme case were the Sicilians, who were from an especially poor part of Italy and whose destination was predominantly the United States as far back as 1886 and continued to be so for decades, with 95,000 Sicilian immigrants out of 109,000 going to the U.S. as late as 1920. The relative proportions of northern and southern Italians among the total immigration from Italy over the years has been very different in Brazil and Argentina, for example, compared to the United States, a fact reflected in the later history of Italians in these countries. The temporary nature of much Italian emigration has been reflected in the relative proportions of men and women involved. One sign of temporary emigration or sojourning is an unbalanced sex ratio among the emigrants. In the early years of Italian emigration, nearly 90% of the emigrants were male. Many emigrated for the express purpose of returning with money to purchase land or a home in Italy. Others emigrated with the plan of bringing their wives and families over to join them after establishing themselves in a foreign land. Some were simply exploring the possibilities. Neither those who planned to stay nor those who planned to return always carried out these plans. Many repeatedly postponed their return and only later in life realized that they were going to remain permanently where they were. Others went back and forth across the ocean before making up their minds. Even from distant Australia, 31% of the Italian men who arrived between 1922 and 1940 also departed permanently, while an additional 24% made trips back to Europe, though settled in Australia. Finally, there were Italian seasonal migratory workers, whose migrations took them across the Atlantic, especially to South America, where seasons are the reverse of those in the Northern Hemisphere, permitting them to be harvest laborers in both places. While it is impossible to know how many returnees to Italy were carrying out their original plans, how many were intentionally migratory workers, and how many were giving up hope of permanent settlement abroad, some general clues are provided by sex ratios and marital status. 3/4 of the returnees from the United States in the early 20th century were single, and 90% were male, which suggests sojourning or exploratory emigration. But half the Italians returning from Brazil during the same period were women, and 3/4 of all Italian returnees from Brazil were married, suggesting disappointed hopes. The historical experiences of Italian immigrants in the two countries during that era add further support to these implications. One effect of the massive Italian emigration, combined with large-scale return to Italy, was that considerable knowledge of foreign countries built up in Italy. But it was typically highly specific knowledge of particular places abroad, concentrated in particular places in Italy. One result was that rates of emigration varied enormously between very similar provinces and villages in Italy, even when they were located near each other, for one community might have overseas contacts and the next community not. Another result was a concentration of Italians from particular provinces and even villages in Italy living in particular cities or even neighborhoods in the lands to which they emigrated. For example, in the middle of the 20th century, there were more than 1,000 Italians from the small Sicilian town of Pigiarelle living in Sydney, Australia, and virtually no one from the other Sicilian towns nearby. Two towns in northern Italy, only 4 miles apart, sent the bulk of their respective emigrants to opposite sides of the Australian continent. By 1939, there were more people from some Italian villages living in Australia than there were still remaining in Italy. In the Western Hemisphere, there were similar patterns of regional, provincial, and village concentrations. In various American cities, Italians from specific towns and villages concentrated in particular neighborhoods or even streets. The same was true in Buenos Aires and Toronto. Before considering the impact of Italian immigrants on other countries, it is worth noting their impact on Italy. In 1902, they sent back 9 million lira, more than 2 million American dollars at that time, and 7 million lira of this was from the United States. These remittances increased nearly tenfold to 84 million lira in 1914, 66 million of which came from the United States. By 1920, Italy was receiving 1 billion lira from abroad. In addition, those who were repatriated brought back substantial savings with them. They also brought back new ideas, less deference to the local aristocracy, and more concern for educating their children, for example. Sometimes they had become so different from their neighbors that they tended to live apart, in enclaves of returnees. Italy. In the absence of strong religious or political ties, among southern Italians especially, the family has long been the focus of intense loyalties in Italy. Although the family, and especially the family honor, has been a concept that extends far beyond the immediate nuclear family, southern Italy has not been an extended family society. Intense loyalties within the nuclear family have eclipsed all other loyalties to the extent that even close relatives have counted for very little by comparison and have often been viewed suspiciously, competitively, or enviously. Those outside the family counted for even less. Children seldom played with anyone except relatives, and the concept of making friends outside the family was foreign to the culture. The strength of these patterns varied not only by region, but also by social class. Such patterns have been stronger in southern Italy than in the north, and strongest of all on the island of Sicily. By class, the traditional patterns were preserved most by the lower socioeconomic classes. The preservation of the family and the family honor, as conceived among the southern Italian masses, entailed the careful isolation of girls before marriage and of wives afterward. While working children have been more common in Italy than elsewhere in European civilization, working wives have been less common. Both patterns have followed Italians around the world. Within Italy itself, as late as 1911, more than half of all children between the ages of 10 and 15 were gainfully employed. Few southern Italian families of that era could afford to sacrifice their children's earnings for the sake of long years of schooling. Nor was formal education viewed as unambiguously beneficial, for it was often seen as a threat to traditional ways and to the solidarity of the family. These attitudes, too, followed Italian emigrants around the world. The emigrants who left Italy generally had very little in the way of financial assets, and were in fact often destitute when they arrived at their various destinations. Their major assets consisted of cultural patterns developed in the hard struggle for existence, particularly in the south of Italy. They were willing to do hard, dirty, dangerous, and menial work, to work long hours without complaint, to remain sober and dependable, and to save. However, they brought no tradition of individual initiative as employees, being from a society where such initiative was considered offensive by employers and others above them on the social scale. Moreover, southern Italian emigrants seldom had the technical or industrial skills that German emigrants had, and the agricultural techniques used in Italy were generally backward. Illiteracy was also relatively high among Italians, again especially those from the south of Italy. But the Italian emigrants carried with them a pattern of extreme thrift and a family pooling of efforts and money, traits that proved useful in getting an economic foothold in foreign lands. Beyond the family, however, the southern Italians had relatively little tradition of organizing, whether for economic, political, cultural, or recreational purposes. This, too, was in sharp contrast with the German pattern. While most Italians in the southern provinces worked on the land, they were usually not farmers living on farms or leading a rural life. Rather, they were generally village and town dwellers who were either employed on the land by others or who were sharecroppers. Those who owned land often had tiny, scattered, uneconomic patches, a product of the division and redivision of farms with inheritance from generation to generation. In short, there was usually no rural way of life, nor even self-supporting family farms, but instead an insecure, poverty-stricken existence at the mercy of employers and landlords. It was a kind of life that they had no desire to recreate in other lands. Thus, this agricultural people typically became an urban people abroad, and those who returned to Italy often did so after saving enough money to buy their own land in larger, self-sustaining sizes, with the prestige that being a genuine landowner brought in Italian society. But southern Italian emigrants were seldom simply farmers in the old world who became farmers overseas, in the manner of many German or Scandinavian emigrants. The proportions of agricultural and non-agricultural occupations among Italian emigrants varied over time, with shifts back and forth. Non-agricultural occupations predominated among the early immigrants, being overtaken by agricultural occupations for the first time in 1883, with the non-agricultural emigrants resuming predominance in the late 1890s and remaining predominant on into the 20th century. The sex imbalance, however, tended to persist. Male emigrants from Italy outnumbered female emigrants several times over from 1876 until 1917, when female emigrants were briefly in the majority. After the First World War, male predominance resumed, though not on as extreme a scale as before. Italian emigration began a long decline in the early 1920s when the United States and other Western Hemisphere nations imposed restrictive laws against further immigration. The Mussolini regime in Italy also restricted the outflow. The Great Depression of the 1930s reduced emigration still more drastically, and the Second World War brought it to a complete halt. When emigration resumed in the post-war era, most Italian emigrants went to Europe. The first post-war year, 1946, saw approximately 110,000 emigrants leave Italy, a number exceeded in every year thereafter until 1975. The peak of this post-war emigration was reached in 1961, when more than 387,000 people emigrated from Italy. However, even this peak was less than half of the Italian emigration of 1906. Perhaps more important, Italy after 1975 became a net recipient of immigrants. Europe. People from the Italian peninsula spread across Europe long before modern Italy was formed in 1861. Indeed, at least as far back as the Roman Empire. Modern Italian emigration has, of course, been a very different movement of people from that of the Roman conquerors. In most of 20th century Europe, Italians have come as seasonal or longer-term sojourners, seldom as permanent settlers, from a poorer country, seeking to earn more than they could in their homeland. Often they have taken the harder, dirtier, or more dangerous jobs disdained by the working populations of the host nation, or they have been willing to work for less, or for longer hours, or with more docility. This pattern was already well established before the First World War among Italian immigrants in France, Germany, Switzerland, and the Austro-Hungarian Empire. However, there were also some highly skilled Italians, including architects who designed buildings and other structures in various countries around the world. The Kremlin was designed by Italian architects, as were many of the other onion-domed buildings in Russia. Their numbers were, of course, much smaller than the numbers of unskilled laborers. France was attracting large numbers of seasonal agricultural workers from Italy, men, women, and children, in the 19th century, and there was an urban Italian colony in Marseille as well. In 1851, there were more than 63,000 Italians in France, and by 1911, more than 400,000. More than any other foreign group in France, and more than one-fourth of all foreigners there. The movement of Frenchmen from rural to urban life was offset by an importation of agricultural workers from other countries, principally from Italy. Urban centers in France also attracted Italian immigrants. In 1911, there were nearly 34,000 in Paris, and at about the same time, at least 125,000 in Marseille. In Lyon, the glass industry, itself derived from Italy, employed at least 3,000 Italian boys in work considered too exhausting for French boys. The sojourning Italians in France, as in much of the rest of Europe, the Western Hemisphere, and Australia, were noted for their extremely parsimonious manner of living in order to save money to take back or send back to Italy. Often this meant living not only in the most crowded quarters, several men per room was not uncommon, but also in the dirtiest, ill-ventilated places with little sunlight and much exposure to disease. This pattern prevailed not only in France, but also in Germany, Switzerland, and Britain. Disliked by fellow workers for accepting low pay and hard work, Italians tended also to be socially disdained in general. They seldom intermarried with the host population in France, Germany, or Switzerland. Among the Italians themselves, immigrants from northern Italy kept aloof from southern immigrants, and other regional, provincial, or local differences also fragmented Italian communities in other European countries, as they were similarly fragmented in the Western Hemisphere and Australia. There was little attraction between Italians as such. Unlike other immigrants to Switzerland, Italians did not concentrate in the regions populated by Swiss citizens of their own ancestry. Most Italian immigrants in Switzerland went to non-Italian regions of the country. Certain occupational patterns also recurred among Italian immigrants in Europe and elsewhere. Aside from the large contingent of unskilled laborers in industry and agriculture, Italians became notable as fishermen from the Iberian Peninsula to Greece and all around the Mediterranean to Turkey, Egypt, Tunisia, and Algiers, as well as further afield in the United States and Australia. They became miners, not only in France and Germany, as already noted, but also in Switzerland, Austria, Belgium, Luxembourg, Greece, and Russia, as well as in such non-European nations of the Mediterranean region as Turkey, Egypt, and Tunisia. Italians also became notable as street musicians, from Britain to the Austro-Hungarian Empire to the Caucasus region of Russia. Winemaking has been another characteristic Italian endeavor abroad as at home, in France, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and Russia, as well as in more remote parts of the world, such as Australia, Argentina, and the United States. Construction work in general has attracted many Italians, all across Europe, as well as in other parts of the world. They helped build a railroad line to Sarajevo, as well as railroads in Switzerland, Greece, Romania, Russia, and Turkey. They helped build canals in Romania, Greece, and Suez. Among the skilled trades associated with construction, Italians have been prominent as masons. Switzerland had more than 5,500 Italian masons in 1909, and Italian masons were involved in the modernization of Sarajevo during the same era. The First World War brought emigration to an end, and the domination of the fascists in Italy from the early 1920s until the end of the Second World War also restricted emigration. For a brief period after World War II, Italy became a recipient of a massive return of Italians, more than 500,000, from the Balkans and North Africa, as well as a recipient of refugees from Yugoslavia. When large-scale emigration from Italy resumed after this long hiatus, Western Europe became the principal destination of Italian emigrants. Throughout the 1950s, Italy supplied more than half of all the immigrant labor in Europe. France became one of the principal destinations of Italian emigrants, approximately 90,000 of them being employed there in 1957. They remained the principal group of foreign workers there until 1960, when they were still an absolute majority among immigrant workers in France. However, during the 1960s, the flow of emigrants from Italy diverted to West Germany, as France drew more of its labor from Spain, Portugal, and Algeria. By 1965, 32% of all Italian emigrants worldwide were in Germany, 37% in Switzerland, and only 7% in France. Just 18% went outside of Europe. However, this did not mean that there were growing permanent settlements of Italians across Europe. Return migration from European countries was also heavy. Italians in Western Europe continued largely in their traditional role as sojourners, as contrasted with the permanent settling of Italians in the Western Hemisphere and Australia. By the early 1960s, return migration from Europe was more than four-fifths of direct migration, while outside Europe, less than 10% of Italian emigrants returned. The net migration to European and non-European countries for the period from 1946 to 1965 was thus virtually the same, despite the much larger initial outflow to Europe. Western Europe's importance to Italy has not been primarily as a settlement area, but as a source of income. Emigrant remittances from Western Europe to Italy totaled $381 million in 1964, more than three times the emigrant remittances from North America, 15 times the emigrant remittances from South America, and nearly 21 times the emigrant remittances from Australia. Italians in the other regions of the world were, by then, primarily permanent settlers overseas. Although Italy continued to be the largest European supplier of emigrants to the rest of the continent, by 1990 there were almost as many Iranian as Italian emigrants living in Europe, and there were more Turks. While Italians living in Europe outside of Italy numbered more than 1.5 million people, there were nearly 1.5 million Iranians and 2.3 million Turks. Moreover, Italians were little more than 10% of all the foreigners living in Europe. The Western Hemisphere. Mass emigration from Italy to the Western Hemisphere in the last quarter of the 19th century coincided with a more general mass emigration of Europeans across the Atlantic. However, the destinations of the early Italian emigrants especially were not so concentrated on the United States as were the destinations of many other groups. Like the Spaniards, many Italians settled in South America. Argentina absorbed the largest number of Italian immigrants to the Western Hemisphere during the period from 1876 to 1890, and Brazil became the leading recipient nation for Italian immigrants in the first half of the 1890s. Then the United States took over the lead in the later 1890s, holding that lead on into the early decades of the 20th century. In 1920, on the eve of restrictive American immigration laws, more than half of all immigrants from Italy went to the United States. Argentina. Argentina was the prime destination of Italian immigrants in the early decades of mass emigration from Italy, and Italians long remained among the principal immigrants arriving in Argentina. As early as 1864, Italians were 40% of all immigrants in Argentina, and they were nearly 40% of all foreigners in Argentina as late as 1914, still outnumbering the 35% of immigrants who came from Spain, the original colonizing country. The large Italian population of Argentina grew by natural increase as well as by immigration. Italians have the highest birth rate of all the immigrants. More than 100,000 Italians arrived in Argentina during the 1860s, nearly 10 times the immigration to the United States during the same decade. During the 1880s, Italian immigration to Argentina totaled nearly 500,000 compared to 300,000 to the United States. In the first decade of the 20th century, Italian immigration to Argentina peaked at nearly 800,000, though by then it was considerably surpassed by the 2 million Italian immigrants to the U.S. Over the entire period from 1857 to 1950, more than 3.2 million Italians arrived in Argentina, and nearly 1.5 million departed. Some were migratory agricultural workers, known locally as golondrinas, swallows, because they came and went with the seasons, taking advantage of Argentina's southern hemisphere opposite seasons from Italy's to work during the growing and harvesting seasons in both countries. The impact of the Italians on Argentine development was even greater than their numerical impact on the population. They brought a pattern of thrift, of hard work, and of entrepreneurship largely lacking in the existing Argentine population. "We don't know how to save," an Argentine writer of that era declared. In Europe as well, the Argentine was known as the spendthrift of the world. No such characterization applied to the Italians in Argentina, who saved even out of low incomes. As early as 1860, nearly one-third of the depositors in the Banco de Buenos Aires were Italian. By 1887, there were twice as many depositors of Italian citizenship as of Argentine citizenship. Italians likewise took on manual labor disdained by the Argentines. They became agricultural workers in huge numbers. More than 500,000 immigrant agricultural workers arrived between 1876 and 1897, virtually creating agriculture in Argentina, where the land under cultivation by 1895 was nearly 9 times as large as it was less than a quarter of a century earlier. Italian immigrants often began as peons, saved, and over the years rose to become sharecroppers and eventually landowners. There were whole colonies, which were predominantly Italian. For example, in 1905, more than 10,000 families in agricultural colonies in Córdoba were Italian, out of a total of 13,435 families in those colonies. Here, by this time, 4/5 of the landowners were Italians, whether their land was owned free and clear or was mortgaged. In Mendoza, at about the same time, Italians predominated in grape growing and winemaking. In urban occupations as well, Italians were prominent among manual workers at various levels of skill. Among those Italians who immigrated to Argentina between 1876 and 1897, 94,000 were day laborers, 13,000 were masons, and another 33,000 were artisans and craftsmen of various sorts. Most of the country's masons, seamen, tradespeople, architects, importers, engineers, restaurant and hotel owners were Italian. While Italians in Argentina worked in many of the same occupations as in Europe or the United States, they also reached many higher level positions earlier in Argentina and became prominent or even dominant in some professions and as entrepreneurs. In addition to becoming prominent in law and medicine and as university professors, Italians long dominated as architects in Argentina. Many of the public buildings, churches, banks, and private homes were designed by Italian architects and built by Italian builders, employing Italian skilled labor. Much of modern Buenos Aires, including the water supply and sewage systems, was designed and built by Italians. More than half the iron production of Argentina was attributed to Italians, as was the ownership of more than 600 flour mills. In Buenos Aires, they predominated in the production of alcoholic beverages, except beer, where the Germans were preeminent. The large, wealthy landowning classes in Argentina were Spanish descendants of those who received huge grants of land from the government of Spain in colonial times. However, this wealthy Argentine aristocracy had little interest in commerce and industry. Over the years, as the economy became more industrialized and commercial, this was primarily the work of various immigrant groups, who became disproportionately the owners of the business enterprises of the country. By 1914, foreigners, who were about 30% of the Argentine population, owned 72% of the commercial firms in the country, 82% in Buenos Aires. While native Argentines were a majority of all property owners, this reflected their continued dominance among rural landowners. But in Buenos Aires, the foreign-born owned 60% of all the real estate. The active economic role of foreigners during the immigrant era left enduring marks on the Argentinian social structure. As late as 1962, only about half the upper-class Argentines had Spanish surnames. Italians were an important part of the foreign entrepreneurial class that emerged in the immigrant era, despite the initial poverty of Italian immigrants. By 1909, Italians in Buenos Aires owned more than twice as many food and drinking establishments as the native Argentines, more than three times as many shoe stores, and more than 10 times as many barber shops. Although only 32% of the population of Buenos Aires in 1887, Italians owned 58% of the industrial establishments. In Corrientes, Italian commercial houses were among the largest. Italians were also more active in the Argentinian labor movement than were the Argentines. Over the years, Italians came to be nationally the most numerous of the owners and workers in Argentina's industrial and commercial enterprises. Even these sharp statistical differences between the Italians and the Argentines tended to understate the role of the Italians, for second-generation Italians were counted as Argentines. In agriculture, the Italians were noted for their patience, energy, and frugality, as contrasted with the Argentine agricultural worker who was seen as lazy, frivolous, and totally lacking in ambition. Much the same contrast was seen in the cities, where Italians were noted for having the drive and ambition native criollos lacked. Unlike the Italian agriculturalists, who were largely from northern Italy, the urban Italians were largely from southern Italy. Many of them became factory workers, artisans, mechanics, bricklayers, or tradesmen, and some became wealthy in the construction industry. Artistically and culturally, the Italians have had a major impact on Argentina at both elite and popular levels, in architecture, drama, sculpture, and painting on the one hand, and in cooking on the other. The Argentinian version of the Spanish language has also acquired Italian words from this segment of the population. Prior to World War I, the overwhelming majority of Italians in Buenos Aires married other Italians, only a small percent acquired Argentine citizenship, and the language of the home, and of many workplaces, was Italian. A variety of Italian language newspapers appeared and disappeared, but the largest and longest lasting of these achieved a circulation of 40,000 in 1904, making it the third largest newspaper in Argentina at that time. The Italian provincial, regional, and local origin differences which fragmented Italian immigrant communities in other countries also appeared in Argentina. The many mutual aid societies set up by Italian immigrants reflected their exclusive admissions policies, which limited membership to those from particular parts of Italy. One of the areas of Argentine life in which the early generations of Italians played little role was government and politics. Political appointees were almost invariably native Argentines, though not because of any special skill they possessed, for these political appointees were in fact notoriously incompetent. The exclusions of immigrants were only part of the story. The political apathy of Italians, observed in other countries, was also characteristic of Italian immigrants in Argentina. Only in later generations did non-Hispanics in general, and Italians in particular, play an important role in Argentine politics. The most famous of all modern Argentine political leaders, Juan Perón, was half Italian. He was, of course, not an ethnic Italian leader, nor was an earlier Argentine president of Italian extraction in the 19th century, who paid little attention to the Italian community in Argentina. Argentina's Italians became, over the years, essentially Argentines, though Argentina itself changed culturally because of them and their forebears. Continuing immigration to Argentina from Italy had, by the early 1960s, dwindled to levels far below those of the immigrant era, and was more than counterbalanced by return migration. Brazil. There were few Italian immigrants in Brazil before the middle of the 19th century. One of these few, however, was a butcher shop owner with a Brazilian wife. His name was Giuseppe Garibaldi, later destined to return to his native land and to glory. Massive European immigration into Brazil began in the last quarter of the 19th century. Italians were a major part of that immigration, as Brazil was a major recipient of Italian immigrants. During more than half a century of immigration, from 1884 to 1939, approximately one-third of all immigrants to Brazil were from Italy, more than from any other country, including Portugal, whose people dominated colonial Brazil. Italian immigrants were especially prominent in the earlier part of this period. The 1 million Italians who immigrated to Brazil in the late 19th century constituted almost half of all immigrants arriving there at that time. These were predominantly northern Italians. Later, by the early 20th century, southern Italians predominated among the immigrants from Italy. But for the entire period 1876 to 1930, 57% of Italian immigration was from northern Italy, and 43% was from the south. These changing immigration patterns reflected the recruiting patterns in Italy of the Brazilian coffee plantation owners and the availability of immigration subsidies by the Brazilian government. Recruiting officers for Brazilian planters operated only in the north of Italy because northern Italians were preferred. At the height of Italian immigration to Brazil in the 1890s, 91% of the immigration to the state of Sao Paulo, where both coffee growing and Italian immigration were centered, was subsidized. At the same time, immigration to the state of Sao Paulo was more than two-thirds of all immigration into Brazil. Because these government subsidies were designed to encourage whole families to settle in order to minimize return migration, the Italian immigration to Brazil did not exhibit the drastic sex imbalance found in other countries. As the subsidizing of immigrants declined in the early 20th century, however, the regional origins of Italian immigrants to Brazil began to reflect the general regional pattern of immigration from Italy at that time, which was more southern than northern. The coffee-growing regions of Sao Paulo, located north and west of the city of the same name, attracted immigrants from many countries. But during the coffee boom of the late 19th century, nearly three-quarters of these immigrants were from Italy. Although substantial numbers of Japanese began arriving in the early 20th century, joining large streams of immigrants from Germany, Spain, and Portugal, nevertheless, Italians made up nearly half of all the immigrants to Sao Paulo during the period from 1887 to 1930, roughly from the end of slavery to the beginning of the Great Depression. Because Italian immigrants were a substantial majority of the coffee plantation workers, they contributed to the maintenance of Brazil's preeminence in the world market for coffee. More than half of the world's coffee came from Brazil, and 90% of Brazil's coffee was produced in the state of Sao Paulo, which is roughly equal in size to Italy. The ownership of large coffee plantations remained primarily in the hands of the Brazilian elite, though immigrants in general, and Italians in particular, later emerged as owners of more modest-sized farms producing coffee. That was, however, years after working under trying conditions as field hands. Arriving in Brazil, as the institution of slavery was being brought to an end there, many Italian indentured laborers on the coffee plantations found themselves being subjected to the abusive treatment that had been common under the slave regime. These practices included the flogging of male workers and sexual assaults on women and girls. Frauds and unhealthy living conditions added to their woes, and many of these early Italian immigrants returned to Italy destitute. Others stayed on, however, some saving enough to become landowners themselves. Given the availability of frontier land in the region, as well as other land not suitable for coffee growing, there was a considerable turnover of coffee plantation workers, some of whom went on to become general farmers, and some of whom became coffee growers themselves. Because coffee trees required a special combination of conditions, at no time was more than 15% of the land in the state of Sao Paulo producing coffee, even during years when that state supplied half the coffee in the world. A growing worldwide demand for coffee and the building of railroad lines in Brazil to facilitate movement of the crop to port for export led to an almost continuous expansion of the industry. Output doubled from the mid-1880s to the early 1890s and doubled again by the end of the 19th century. This led to a growing demand for workers on the plantations, which was accentuated by a high rate of turnover among plantation workers, many of whom used their savings to buy farms of their own. In order to maintain a labor supply and continue receiving immigrants from Italy, Brazilian coffee growers were forced to improve the conditions on their plantations. In the Western Plateau region of Sao Paulo, where coffee production flourished, by 1905, Italians owned about one-seventh of the rural properties, worth about one-tenth the value of such properties in the area. By 1920, Italians owned nearly 16% of the land, now worth nearly 22% of the value. Coffee growing was not the only rural occupation of Italian immigrants. Among the contributions of the Italians in Brazilian agriculture were the promotion of rice cultivation and the development of a wine industry. While the Italian agricultural colonies in Rio Grande do Sul were not as wealthy as those of the Germans in the same region, Italian artisans were able not only to compete with, but even to displace the German artisans. However, artisans in general were a declining group, smaller in number in 1950 than in 1890. In the early 20th century, Italian firms arose to compete with German firms in metallurgy, and the principal oil refinery in Porto Alegre was Italian, again in competition principally with German firms. Four-fifths of the butter production and almost nine-tenths of the wine production in the region were also in the hands of Italians. Among the industries arising in the Italian sections of the state of Sao Paulo were rice mills, tanneries, paper mills, furniture factories, distilleries, and shoe factories. Italians were prominent among the workers in this region, as well as among the owners. In 1911, the Sao Paulo textile industry employed approximately 10,000 workers, three-fifths of them Italian. In Rio Grande do Sul and Santa Catarina, Italians owned 19% of all industrial enterprises, and in the metropolitan area of Sao Paulo, 48%. In both places, they and the Germans together owned over half the industrial enterprises, with the Portuguese and Brazilians of Portuguese ancestry owning less than one-fourth of such businesses. Neither the striking success of Italians in particular regions of the country or particular sectors of the economy, nor their general rise to respectable prosperity nationally, should create the impression that this great historical process was completed quickly, much less easily. An observer of the late 19th century arrivals of immigrants to Santa Catarina noted that, while German immigrants arrived with clothing, baggage, and work implements, the Italians came in rags. Among the early Italian immigrants to Sao Paulo, even modest savings could be accumulated only by painful sacrifices. Most of the southern Italian immigrants were illiterate, and many, if not most, of the northern Italian immigrants were as well. Schools in Sao Paulo in the immigrant era were declared to be a horror and a shame, both pedagogically and on sanitary grounds. For many Italian immigrants, becoming a bootblack was the first step upward. Shining shoes in Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo, and Santos was almost exclusively an Italian occupation. Neither education nor special skills were keys to the progress of most Italians in Brazil, but simply their willingness to work. They were preferred on the coffee plantations, for example, simply because they were regarded as more industrious than the local Brazilians. Social and cultural progress came no more easily than economic advancement. Child labor and lack of schooling long remained common. In the early years of the 20th century, even reasonably prosperous Italians allowed their children to grow up without elementary education, and it was said that every child past toddling earns more than its current cost. Italians tended to cling to their own language and culture, especially in the agricultural regions, though this did not reflect any strong loyalty to Italy or any strong sense of being Italian. In Brazil, as elsewhere, regional fragmentation was common among the Italians. In the cities, Portuguese words began to find their way into the Italian language and Italian words into the Portuguese language, but neither assimilation nor acculturation was rapid, either with the Portuguese majority or with other immigrant groups. Even in Santa Catarina, where there were more than 100,000 Germans and at least 30,000 Italians, there was seldom intermarriage between them. The Italian influence on Brazil reached well beyond their own enclaves. In addition to making possible Brazil's world preeminence in coffee production and creating a considerable part of the industrial development of the country, Italians also made major contributions to architecture and to popular music in Brazil. More broadly, they and other immigrants have transformed Brazil into a modern nation. The United States. While the United States was the largest single recipient of Italian immigrants during the era of mass emigration, it was also receiving vast numbers of immigrants from other countries as well. This alone meant that the Italian impact on American society was not likely to be as dramatic as the impact of Italian immigrants in Argentina or Brazil. Moreover, the native-born American population was both larger and already relatively well endowed with the industrial and commercial skills and aptitudes that were so lacking in societies where Italian immigrants supplied these key elements of economic modernization. Finally, Italian immigrants to the United States came overwhelmingly from the more backward southern part of Italy. Despite all this, however, Italian immigrants played a significant role in American social history and included individuals who rose to national stature in a number of fields. Italian immigrants were among the last and largest waves of immigrants from Europe. The mass exodus from famine-stricken Ireland to the United States in the middle of the 19th century exceeded 200,000 people in only 1 year, 1851, while Italian immigration exceeded that total in 8 different years during the first 2 decades of the 20th century. Only the mass exodus of Jews from Eastern Europe to the United States during the same era was at all comparable in size. Altogether, more than 5 million Italians immigrated to the United States between 1876 and 1930. Of these, about 2 million returned to Italy. Despite a preponderance of males over females among Italian immigrants, the still greater preponderance of males among those who returned to Italy led to a lessening imbalance between the sexes among those remaining in the United States. While there were well over 3 times as many males as females among Italian immigrants, the ratio was less than 2 to 1 among the resident Italian-American population as early as 1910. With the passing years, especially after the virtual cutoff of immigration from Italy in the 1920s, the sexes became balanced. In the era before mass emigration from Italy, those Italians who came to the United States were largely from the northern provinces. The total Italian population officially recorded in the United States in 1850 was less than 4,000 persons. By 1880, there were more than 44,000, and by 1900, there were 484,027. Between 1880 and 1900, Southern Italians became predominant among the immigrants from Italy and remained so as the immigrant tide swelled in the 20th century. A predominantly agricultural people in Italy, the immigrants became predominantly urban in the United States, which no longer had the abundance of cheap land still found in Argentina or Brazil. In the cities, previous waves of immigrants had occupied other economic niches and neighborhoods, so that Italians became part of a more general pattern of ethnic succession in occupations, housing, schools, and even organized crime, which was dominated by Irish and Jewish gangsters before Italian gangsters began to take over during the 1920s. Because of the natural increase of other groups who had immigrated earlier, even the record-breaking immigration from Italy in the early 20th century seldom made the Italians the largest foreign origin group in American cities, with New York and New Orleans being notable exceptions. In no other major American city were Italians either the largest or the second largest immigrant group. Italian immigrants, at their peak, were just 1.5% of the U.S. population, compared to 3% of the total population of Brazil and 12.5% of the Argentine population. In New York City, Italians were 7.4% of the population, compared to 20% in Buenos Aires and 35% in Sao Paulo. In one respect, however, Italian immigrants to the United States were very much like Italians who settled in South America. These immigrants typically began at the very bottom of the occupational ladder. Out of 474 foreign bootblacks in New York toward the end of the 19th century, 473 were Italians. Italians were also prominent among rag pickers, sewer workers, and in whatever other hard, dirty, dangerous, or menial jobs others disdained. Italian children worked at an early age, as in Italy, even at the expense of their education. But Italians seldom accepted charity or resorted to prostitution, as some other immigrant groups, such as the Irish, did. This, too, reflected patterns that went back to Italy. Both in 1880 and in 1905, approximately three-fourths of the Italians working in New York City were blue-collar workers, with most of the remainder being peddlers, shopkeepers, and barbers. More than half the barbers in New York at that time were Italian. While the proportion of blue-collar workers was broadly similar to that in Buenos Aires, in the latter city, significantly more of these were skilled workers. Moreover, the remainder in Buenos Aires included more owners of small industrial and commercial establishments rather than peddlers and barbers. High white-collar occupations were rare for Italians in both cities, but higher, 4%, in Buenos Aires than in New York, 2%. In New York, as in Buenos Aires and other cities in other countries, Italians settled in clusters related to their places of origin in Italy. Not only did Neapolitans and Sicilians settle in different parts of New York, people from different parts of Sicily clustered on different streets. The settling of Italians from particular towns in Italy on particular streets in American cities was also a pattern found in San Francisco, Chicago, New Haven, Cleveland, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Rochester, among other places. What was seldom created in the United States, however, were all Italian enclaves, rural or urban. Few Italians became rural in America, and in the cities there were seldom any all-Italian neighborhoods. Rather, Italians typically lived interspersed among other immigrant groups, such as the Irish, the Jews, the Germans, and Poles, even though the particular Italians interspersed in a given section might be predominantly from one province or village in Italy. Initially, both in Chicago and in San Francisco, marriages among Italians were primarily between people whose families had originated in the same province or village in Italy. Eventually, in the second generation and later, marriages began to occur among people from different geographical origins in Italy and also with non-Italians. Italians, however, were much slower than other groups to intermarry. In 1920, 97% of Italian men in the United States had Italian wives. This was particularly true of Southern Italians, especially those from smaller communities. As late as 1950, more than three-quarters of Italian marriages were with other Italians. While immigrants from various parts of Italy might settle in the same American city, it was also true that different parts of the United States had different proportions of people from particular parts of Italy. Italians in New Orleans were mostly Sicilians, for example, while Italians in San Francisco and in California in general were mostly from northern Italy. Neapolitans and Calabrians became open-pit miners in Minnesota. Immigrants from Turin created an agricultural settlement in North Carolina, and Piedmontese settled in the town of Genoa, Wisconsin. More than half of all the Italians in the United States, however, were concentrated in the Middle Atlantic states in 1910, New York State alone having more than 472,000 and Pennsylvania nearly 200,000. Four-fifths were urban. Wherever the early Italian immigrants lived, they tended to live in squalor. Overcrowded and filthy living quarters were common among them, whether in New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, St. Paul, or in agricultural laborers' camps or at temporary construction sites. Italian laborers also tended to skimp on food, even as compared to other unskilled immigrant laborers, in a desperate effort to save money. Frailty of physique among Italian immigrants was noted at the time, when they were considered less strong than Irish workmen, for example. With the passage of time and the arising of new generations, however, this complaint disappeared. So, too, did the squalor of Italian homes. In later generations, Italian housewives took special pride in the cleanliness of their homes. The occupations of the Italians in the United States during the immigrant era of the late 19th and early 20th centuries were much like those they held in other countries. At least half of all immigrant masons and barbers arriving in the United States were Italians. Fishermen, shoemakers, waiters, and tradesmen were also common among Italian immigrants, and the selling of fruits was a specialty in which Italians became prominent, both in New York and in New Orleans. While not as well represented among skilled occupations in general as the Germans, Britons, or other Northern and Western European immigrants, Italians were better represented than the Croatians, Slovaks, Magyars, and other Southern and Eastern European immigrants. Most Italian immigrants, however, were unskilled laborers. As elsewhere, they often worked on construction projects, in mines, and on railroad building projects. Often they succeeded other immigrant groups in these and other manual laboring occupations. Over the years, Italians replaced the Irish as unskilled laborers building railroads and on the New York waterfront. They also replaced the German and Irish workers in the petroleum industry of New Jersey, the Irish, Germans, and Welsh in Pennsylvania's coal mining region, and Jewish workers in New York's clothing industry. As early as 1890, 90% of the employees in New York's public works were Italian. Among 12,500 workers who built the Erie Canal, 10,500 were Italian. They were also predominant among the workers who built trolley lines in large eastern cities and the subways of Boston and New York. Among the relatively few Italians to go into farming in the United States, most were from northern Italy. Of these, the Italian and Italian-Swiss winemakers of California became the best known. Italians also took over abandoned wastelands, requiring great exertions to bring them under cultivation, and often became successful as truck farmers. Occupations requiring education long remained rare among Italians in the United States, printers or newspaper reporters, for example, as well as more exalted professions. As workmen, Italians were noted for their diligence and sobriety, the latter often contrasted with the drinking of the Irish, but also for a lack of initiative that required them to have considerable supervision. The pattern was similar to that noted in Europe during the same era, and was consonant with the docility expected of workers in Italy. Child labor was another Italian pattern brought over from the homeland, and it often interfered with, or even prevented, schooling. Italian women worked more often in the United States than in Italy, though concern for preserving chastity and avoiding even the appearance of laxity in this regard affected what kind of work they did. Work performed in the home, so-called sweatshop labor, was acceptable and common, as it both preserved the reputation of the wife and facilitated work by the children. Operating sewing machines with other women in a clothing factory was also common. However, Italian women tended to avoid working as domestic servants, which could be seen as potentially compromising, especially in an era of live-in maids. Prostitution was virtually unknown among Italian-American women. Like other workers entering a society with a different language and a very different culture, Italians often sought and performed work with a labor contractor of their own nationality and culture. The labor contractor, or padrone, was often from the same province or community in Italy as his workers. He understood both their culture and the business requirements of the American employer, and he spoke both English and Italian. He was more than a middleman, however. The padrone often advanced money to the workmen, transported them to the job site, supervised them at work, took responsibility for their housing and for providing the kinds of food they were used to. These versatile entrepreneurs did not hesitate to protect their investment by maintaining a prison-like control over the workers to whom they had advanced money, including the use of armed guards. Opportunities for defrauding or otherwise taking advantage of new people in a strange land were numerous, and the padrone system provided reformers and newspaper reporters with numerous scandals. However, the continuing use of padroni by the same workers, year after year, suggests that more than ignorance or gullibility was involved. Men with very limited options, and with serious economic exigencies, were able to find work all across the country, in places they had never seen, among people whose language and way of life they could not understand, and ended up with savings vital to themselves and their families. Repeated attempts by reformers to stamp out the padrone system failed, but it began to die out on its own after about 1920. As existing Italian immigrants grew more able to function independently in the United States, and the second-generation Italian-Americans had no need for Padrone's services. Over the years, as Italians rose up the economic scale, they did so largely through acquiring job skills in blue-collar occupations, rather than by becoming educated and entering the professions. Acquiring knowledge of English and literacy enabled many to become low-level civil servants, but few became doctors, lawyers, or intellectuals. Nor did politics attract many, nor prove particularly rewarding for those it did attract. Irish politicians long continued to represent predominantly Italian districts. Even after experienced politicians arose within the Italian-American communities, they could not count on the votes of their countrymen. There was no pan-Italian solidarity in voting, any more than in the many other activities in which Italians remained regionally fragmented in the United States. The first major Italian-American political figure was Fiorello H. LaGuardia, 1882-1947, who became first a congressman and then the legendary mayor of New York for more than a decade, from 1934 to 1945. Yet even he failed to carry the Italian vote in his 1941 re-election campaign against an Irish opponent. Along with a general and gradual rise of Italians to higher occupational levels over the decades, there were particular instances of dramatic success. In California, and especially in its fertile Napa Valley, many highly successful winemaking businesses arose among Italians from northern Italy and from Switzerland. Italians also excelled in the production of both fresh and canned fruit. By 1922, a California Italian, Giuseppe Di Giorgio, became the largest fruit grower in the United States. Another, in 1916, formed the company which produced Del Monte brand canned fruits and vegetables, the country's largest seller of canned produce. One of the most remarkable success stories in banking history was that of A.P. Giannini, also a California Italian. He founded the Bank of Italy, an American bank designed to attract Italian immigrants as depositors and borrowers. Being familiar with the culture and the parsimoniousness of his fellow Italians, Giannini was able to do a thriving business by serving a group largely overlooked by conventional American banks. By the middle of the 1920s, the Bank of Italy had branches in many of the urban centers of California. Ultimately renamed the Bank of America, it became the largest bank in the world. Despite the prosperity achieved by Italian Americans in general and the spectacular success of a few, their role in American history has not matched their role in the development of Brazil, and especially Argentina. As one indicator, Italians in the United States played nothing like the leadership role they played in both national labor organizations and national business organizations in Argentina. Italians in Argentina constituted 40% of the labor movement in its early formative years and provided key leaders, while in the United States, Italians tended to lag behind other groups in unionization and still more so among the early union leaders. Similarly, Italians were prominent among employer organization leadership in Argentina in its formative years, but were wholly unrepresented among the leadership of the National Association of Manufacturers in the United States during its first 20 years. Such differences partly reflected the fact that the United States was a far more developed country when the Italian immigrants arrived, that other immigrants preceded them and collectively outnumbered them greatly, while in both Argentina and Brazil, the Italians were one of two groups that together constituted the bulk of the immigrant population. However, the complete dominance of northern Italians among the most outstanding Italian-American entrepreneurs of the immigrant era, in the wine industry, canning, fresh fruits, and the Bank of America, suggests that the greater representation of northerners among the Italian immigrants in Argentina and Brazil may also be an important factor in the larger role played by immigrants from Italy in those two countries. Within the early labor movements in both these South American countries, for example, northern Italians tended to be leaders more so than southern Italians. In the United States, at about the same time, 40% of the northern Italians were unionized, compared to only 11% of the southern Italians. With both the business and labor history of Italians in the United States, Argentina, and Brazil reflecting regional differences in Italy, it is difficult to avoid the conclusion that this is yet another example of historic head starts that had enduring consequences. Australia. Although the land area of Australia is comparable in size to that of the continental United States, its population is smaller than that of California. Most Australians live on the coastal fringes of the island continent, leaving the geographically and climatically inhospitable interior largely uninhabited. In sparsely populated Australia, various ethnic groups became socially significant, even though their numbers would be small enough for them to pass virtually unnoticed in the United States. Italian immigration to Australia has never been on a scale comparable to the immigration from Italy to Western Europe or to North or South America. Yet Italians have been both a noticeable presence and a notable presence in Australia. Most immigration from Italy to Australia has occurred since the early 1920s, when American immigration restrictions sent Italians in search of other destinations. Isolated individuals of Italian ancestry lived in Australia from the beginning of its history, having arrived there on the first ships of convicts transported from Britain and on the first ships of free settlers as well. Yet, as late as 1891, there were fewer than 4,000 Italian-born individuals in Australia, and they were outnumbered by Danes, Chinese, and German immigrants, and vastly outnumbered by British-born immigrants. Most of these Italians were from the northern provinces of Italy, and northerners maintained a slight majority among Italian immigrants in Australia as late as 1947. The early Italian immigrants had patterns characteristic of Italians in other countries. They were noted for their hard work, their docility and temperance, and for saving steadily by a simple and even primitive mode of life. Some Australians said that the Italians could live on the smell of an oil rag. For all these traits, they were preferred as workers by some employers and were often disliked by Australian workers. Many Italian immigrants were unskilled laborers, but those with occupational specialties were often miners, fishermen, fruit and vegetable vendors, and restaurant owners. Children were sometimes used as street musicians, as in other countries. In some places, Italian immigrants took over land considered unproductive by unsuccessful Australian farmers and made it successful by hard work. Even in times of unemployment, Italians seldom accepted charity, public or private. As elsewhere, people from particular parts of Italy tended to settle together, and northern and southern Italians were antagonistic to one another. Social life tended to be limited to the family circle or to two or three families. There was little sense of an Italian community as such, though Italians lived separately from Australians. Neither religion nor education played a major role in their lives, and politics aroused little interest. Italians established no schools or churches of their own, and very few newspapers. Not only were most of the Italians who arrived in the last quarter of the 19th century from northern Italy, nearly half came from just one province in northern Italy, and there were highly localized origins within that province as well. Altogether, nearly 90% of the Italian immigrants to Australia during that era came from an area containing only 10% of Italy's population. Yet immigration to Australia was often heavy from the isolated places where it originated. By 1939, there were more people from some Italian villages living in Australia than remained back in Italy. The first major increase of Italian immigration into Australia, called a flood by the standards of the times, began in the 1920s. More than 7,800 arrived in the peak year of 1927. In a country with a total Italian immigrant population of only 4,500 as late as 1921. Altogether, between 1921 and 1930, nearly 24,000 Italian immigrants entered Australia, but subsequent immigration from Italy was sharply reduced by the Great Depression and then by World War II. Although Italians in Australia showed little interest in politics, the politics of Italy, Mussolini's fascism, reached out to touch them, both directly and indirectly. The Italian government, through its representatives in Australia, promoted pro-fascist organizations, which tapped an emotional attachment to Italy and Italian culture, even among immigrants not particularly susceptible to political ideology in general or to fascism in particular. The Second World War also had its impact on Italians in Australia, where 3,650 were interned out of a population of 70,000. Moreover, those Italians remaining outside the internment camps still lived under various restrictions as enemy aliens. The post-World War II era saw immigration from Italy to Australia resume and reach a scale never seen before. While fewer than 1,000 Italians immigrated to Australia from 1945 to 1948, the number shot up to nearly 6,000 the following year and climbed to a peak of more than 30,000 per year in the middle of the 1950s, before beginning an uneven decline that continued until fewer than 10,000 per year were arriving in the early 1970s. Altogether, approximately 374,000 people immigrated from Italy to Australia from 1945 to 1972, making Italians by far the largest non-British ethnic group in the country, and 4% of Australia's total population. Even allowing for substantial return migration, this large influx of immigrants significantly altered the composition of the Italian population in Australia. By 1978, there were 595,000 people who were either first or second generation Italians living in the country. Nearly half, approximately 286,000 people, had been born in Italy. The immigrant families may in fact have included a majority of all Italians in the country, for their children born on Australian soil were counted as part of the second generation, though still living in immigrant homes. Radically different age distributions between first-generation and second-generation Italians reinforce this inference. Two-thirds of the Italian-born population in Australia was between 25 and 54 years of age, while more than four-fifths of second-generation Italians were less than 20 years old. Because of the relative recency of substantial Italian immigration, the adult second generation plus these immigrant families together constituted an estimated 90% of all Italians in Australia, who in total would exceed 650,000 by this reckoning. However, counting all individuals with any trace of Italian ancestry, there might be close to 1 million Australians of Italian descent. Over the years, the Italian population in Australia has changed in many ways. Whereas the earlier Italian immigrants were predominantly rural, the post-war immigrants have been predominantly urban. The regional origins of Italian immigrants have also changed over the years, from northern to southern Italy. From the late 19th century until early in World War II, most Italian immigrants to Australia came from northern Italy. By 1976, however, the most common regional origins of Italian-born immigrants in Australia were southern, with Sicily and Calabria alone accounting for about one-third of the total immigration from Italy. As elsewhere, there was little social mixing of northern and southern Italians in Australia, though northern Italians manned a social welfare agency operating among southern Italians. Marriage patterns have clearly shown the social separation. For the entire period from 1920 to 1954, the great majority of southern Italian males in Australia were married to southern Italian females, whether they were married in Italy or in Australia. Normal family life was easier to establish and maintain for the post-war immigrants from Italy to Australia than it was for their predecessors in an earlier era. A very unbalanced ratio between men and women immigrants, a very low rate of intermarriage with Australians, and the fact that many married men left their wives behind in Italy all made it difficult for the early immigrants to establish families in Australia. In 1871, there were nearly 14 times as many males as females among the 860 Italians in Australia. As late as 1901, the ratio was more than 6 to 1. As of 1921, one-half of all Italian-born men in Australia were married, but one-fourth of these married men had families in Italy. Moreover, the preponderance of males continued for years. However, a greater tendency of males than of females to return to Italy mitigated the sex imbalance, which fell to 2 to 1 by 1947. After the massive post-war immigration, the ratio of males to females among those born in Italy was only 1.2 to 1. As with other groups in other countries, this sex-balanced immigration was a harbinger of permanent settlement. Rates of naturalization and of learning the English language were both much higher among the post-war Italian immigrants than among those of earlier times. Along with more signs of assimilation, the new immigrants also showed some persistent Italian patterns common in other countries. For example, babies born out of wedlock remained very rare among Italians in Australia, one out of every 148 births to women born in Italy, in a community noted for an absence of sex education. Italian schoolchildren have tended to have poor scholastic performances and to drop out of school earlier than Australian children in general, a pattern long ago observed among Italian immigrants in other countries. Another pattern common to Italian immigrants was a below-average crime rate. In religious practices as well, the pattern among Italian immigrants to Australia has been very similar to that observed in other countries. They have been overwhelmingly Catholic and overwhelmingly non-participants in the church. Among the more recent Italian immigrants to Australia, as among the earlier, the desire to work and get ahead has been strong. They have preferred jobs that offered frequent opportunities for working overtime. The desire for home ownership has been high among Italians in Australia, as in other countries. Home ownership has, in fact, been more common among Italians than among Australians in general. More than 4/5 of Sicilian immigrants have become homeowners, though this often involved a real struggle to make the down payment. Italians in Australia have been by no means an affluent group, however, though they have risen from their early poverty. As of 1933, the average Italian male in Australia earned 87% of what Australian males in general earned, and by 1976, 97%. While this represented considerable progress for a group relatively recently integrated, their income level could not explain the high home ownership level of Italians in Australia. As in other countries, Italian immigrants in Australia have had relatively low levels of education and have been statistically underrepresented in professional and technical occupations. Although there were more than twice as many Italian-born males as German-born males in Australia in the early 1980s, there were more than twice as many German-born males as Italian-born males in professional and technical occupations. Nevertheless, Italians have apparently been considered desirable workers in the occupations in which they worked, for even in a period of sharp unemployment in the economy as a whole in 1972, their unemployment rates were not substantially different from those of native-born Australians. Moreover, Italians were self-employed as tradesmen to a greater extent than the Australian population as a whole. Along with these signs of persistent Italian patterns have been signs of assimilation to a new society, at least in such outward forms as language, citizenship, and occupational mobility. More than 90% of the Italians under the age of 15 were born in Australia. But, even among the Italian-born population, by 1976, 4/5 spoke English, even if not exclusively, and a majority were citizens of Australia. Italians from northern Italy more readily adopted some Australian child-rearing practices, but many Sicilians adjusted in various ways as well. Education became increasingly valued by Italians in Australia, but the prerequisites for it may not have been fully understood or not yet present. Occupationally, there were significant changes over the years as well, with Italians no longer being overrepresented among fishermen in Australia, for example. Whereas the early Italian immigrants were primarily laborers, by 1947, more were employers or self-employed than were employees. By the late 1970s, less than 1/6 were unskilled laborers. Italians did not simply melt into the general population, however. They were still distinctively Italian neighborhoods, though many Italians lived outside such neighborhoods. Perhaps most significant, intermarriage remained the exception rather than the rule among men and women born in Italy. Implications. Emigration from Italy, perhaps the largest emigration from any country anywhere in history, illustrates many facets of the process of human migration. The enormous importance of specific and reliable knowledge about destinations has been reflected in the linkage between highly specific places of origin in Italy and highly specific destinations in other countries, including places 10,000 miles away in Australia. The human linkages behind these geographical facts suggest something of the psychic costs of loneliness in a strange land, as well as the actuarial risks associated with settling abroad. More than 90% of Italian immigrants to Australia, for example, came via these human linkages, rather than as isolated individuals seeking a new life at random among the Australian population. Italian emigration also illustrates the different roles that the emigration process can play in the lives of individuals and families. Sojourners and remittances from sojourners have played a key role in the survival of desperately poor families in Italy. Men living in crowded and squalid conditions abroad, skimping on their personal expenses even to the detriment of their health, were often objects of pity or contempt, when in fact they were heroic in their quiet tenacity and self-sacrifice for their loved ones back home. Too proud to take charity, they were not too proud to wear rags and to do the hardest and dirtiest work spurned by others, all the while sending money home from foreign countries to fulfill their family responsibilities. Their reliability in fulfilling their financial obligations was not lost on Australian lending institutions, which readily lent them money to buy land, or on the California institution first known as the Bank of Italy and later as the Bank of America. The time that Italian-born men were away from their wives and children ranged from several months for migratory workers to several years for those who slowly accumulated the money required to bring their families to join them in a foreign land. That such human dramas were reenacted literally millions of times in the far reaches of the globe is not only a tribute to the Italians, but also an inspiration as showing what the human spirit is capable of, and perhaps also a rebuke to those who whine over much less formidable problems. Those Italians blessed with skills tended to take those skills where they were most scarce and thus likely to be more rewarded. Thus, the greatest entrepreneurial success of the Italian immigrants came in underdeveloped countries of the immigrant era, like Argentina and Brazil, and in California, when it was an underdeveloped part of the United States. In each of these places, it was principally northern Italians who reached the economic peaks, but those northern Italians with entrepreneurial skills and capital had the option of settling in more developed regions or nations, and chose instead the route that led to such striking success. Whether high or low in the outside world's economic or social ranking, Italian returnees were impressive to their compatriots when they came back home arrayed like signori, buying land or otherwise raising their families' economic and social positions. Poverty-stricken though much of Italy has been, it has sent forth millions of people with the inner strength and inner values to prosper in more promising lands abroad, sometimes to prosper beyond the natives of those lands. Most of these Italian immigrants took with them no skills, as these are conventionally defined in occupational terms. Among those who did have special callings, however, these were often the same in the many countries to which they went as fishermen, winemakers, masons, musicians, architects, fruit and vegetable growers and sellers, or restaurant and hotel owners. However, Italians abroad did not merely transfer skills from Italy, and they certainly did not transfer much capital. They accumulated both skills and capital in their new settings. But while they absorbed, at varying rates and to varying degrees, the cultures of new lands, they also brought to those lands some of the cultural treasures of Italy, whether in music, art, or architecture, or at the more mundane level of cooking, masonry, and a certain flair seen in Italian writers or entertainers. In these and other ways, the influence of the Italian culture extended farther than it did in the days of the Roman Empire.